The meeting will come to order. And we're going to change the order here just a little bit, and we'll let Representative Hillstrom go first with House File 354. And I'll go ahead and move that House File 354, recommended to pass, and move to the General Register. Representative Hillstrom, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the Homeowner Lender Mediation Act bill. Last year, the Minnesota House of Representatives and the Senate passed a complete ban on foreclosure in Minnesota for 1 year. And it was sent to the governor's desk, and he vetoed it. And so rather than doing that, this is a much more moderate approach. This is a mandatory mediation bill. And what this bill says is that prior to the lender being able to foreclose, the lender would need to offer the homeowner mediation. We started off, again, modeling this after the Farmer Lender Mediation Act, and the governor has asked for a couple of changes, and so we've made the changes that he's asked for up till this point. For example, he asked for counseling to be a screen prior to the mediation. So what that means is that the homeowner would do the current counseling, which is in current law, and if they do that, then they would be offered mediation if that was unsuccessful. So anyone who did not participate in counseling would not be eligible to do the mediation. We also have lowered the fee, the way that this bill is paid for by the county recorder fee, and we reduced that from $4 to $3. Due to the screen, we don't need quite as much money. We anticipate that more than 30,000 foreclosures will occur next year in 2009 in Minnesota. And we believe that this bill will help address that 20% of the Minnesota economy is the housing in Minnesota. And unless we get a handle on our housing crisis, we are not going to get a handle on the economy. So I would stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative. Representative Holberg has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, have you seen an updated fiscal note to reflect the changes that were made?
Representative, go ahead.
Yes. The way we've done the fiscal note is because there is the screen of the counseling, we don't know how effective that's going to be. So what we're saying is that the amount of money that we collect, we are going to do mediation on a first in, first out. So it really is, we will be working within the amount of money that we receive.
And this is the so in other words, you haven't seen a fiscal note on a second engrossment?
Representative Pilstrom.
Mr. Chair, I believe that the fiscal note now says that it's $3 million, which is for every dollar you raise on the recording fee, it's about $1 million.
Okay. Representative Holbert, follow up.
Well, didn't, Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, didn't you reduce the fee from $4 to $3, so it should be a 25% reduction? Is that... Don't you think it would maybe be $3,600,000?
Representative Hillstrom. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Mr. Marks could help me, because I don't even have the fiscal note that you have in your packet with me at the table here.
All right, thank you. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, the fiscal note here is with the fee at $4. When I checked this morning, there was no new fiscal note available. And yes, the fee was reduced from $4 to $3. I was told by Ms. Roberts it might not be a directly proportionate change in the fee, but I think it would be roughly 75% of what's shown on the fiscal note.
Okay, and then just to be clear, this deed increased fee on, would be on all transactions with the county recorder, is that correct?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, that's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Representative Holberg?
Nope.
If not, Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, you know, it says the bill's revenue neutral, and I understand we're collecting $4 per mortgagee, right? $4 per mortgagee. Three? Okay. I guess my question is that's not a big amount, I guess, in the context of an individual mortgage. But again, we're setting up another process. People are paying in, somebody's managing that money, and then we're going to have to be paying for these mediation sessions. Where's the... how do we know we need this? I mean, I've been involved with lots of borrowing and working through mortgages, and it seems like whenever there's issues, that the banks get together and work with the people who have it, because they don't want property back. And so why do we have to do this and charge a fee and manage it and set this process up?
Representative Pilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, throughout all of the court system, we are going to things like mediation and alternative dispute resolution across. And my neighborhood in particular has been hit devastatingly hard. We are just starting to see folks get back into the foreclosed properties. But again, 30,000 projected foreclosures in Minnesota in 2009, and 15,000 projected to select counseling. And of those, approximately 10,000 projected to select mediation to try to work this out. We're seeing that even at the national level, that the federal government feels that we need to do something. Now, the Obama plan, if you are eligible for an Obama plan change, you're not eligible to do mediation through this program. But we can clearly see that this is an issue, and it's going to continue to be an issue. And we really want folks to come together to see if we can work it out, because it is in the banker's best interest, in my opinion, to work it out so they don't end up with all these properties, and it is in the best interest of the community and the neighborhood to not have these houses vacant and on the market and unable to be sold.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I agree with you. I think it is in their best interest. I think that's why they do it. I think that's why they're willing to sit down. I don't think they want to own all this property. Banks aren't in the business usually of owning property. I guess another question is $4, $3 for the mortgagee. Are the lenders putting money in also to the account? That's one question. The second question I would have is there forced participation from both the lender and the borrower to participate in the process, and what do they each have to do as a result of, you know, what are the requirements that they both are under when they do this?
Representative Pilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is actually paid for on the recording fee, so anything that's recorded, people pay. And then we actually did amend at the request of, I believe, the governor's suggestion. We before just had a creditor's bad faith, that in the event that the creditor did not act in good faith in the mediation, that we could continue and stretch out the foreclosure process. However, we were asked to amend good faith on the part of the debtor, and we did do that in the second to the last committee, State Government Finance. So if the mediator finds that the debtor has not participated in the mediation in good faith, then the debtor shall execute a deed in lieu of foreclosure within 90 days of filing of the mediator's affidavit of finding of bad faith. So we do have a mutual consequence for both sides now.
Okay. Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question. Was there testimony? I didn't get to hear this in any committees other than here, so that's why I've got to ask all these things. But was there any testimony regarding the potential consequences as far as the availability of mortgages to people in the state? Is this going to have any effect on lenders coming here to lend?
Representative Pilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've been to a lot of committees, and I don't remember. That probably would have been in Commerce, which would have probably been one of the first committees we've been to. I don't recall that particular thing. Of course, you know, the banks don't want to do it. It started off that we had lengthened the foreclosure process, and now we have this process within the current time frame. So we are not extending the timeline any longer. Again, that was also the governor's office's request. And so we have had folks that have testified in opposition to the fee that we've raised. And, of course, a lot of banks want to be opted out. You know, first, all the banks in Minnesota thought that they should be opted out because they were doing a great job. And, you know, just along the way, others have asked. But we think that this is really important for Minnesotans. And we think it is in the best interest of everyone to come to the table, talk about it, and see if we can't work out. It doesn't mandate that they work something out. It just says you got to come to the table and try to work it out.
Any more? No? Anybody else have any questions? Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, there's some language, section 4 on page 20 and 21, which I thought was fixed up yesterday, and it almost looked like the amendment that I saw didn't get in here, but on lines 20 and 22, the homestead lender mediation account is established as an account in the special revenue fund. And then 20.24 and 25 establishes the account in the state treasury, which is kind of redundant, but it's okay. Then on the top of page 21, lines 21.4 and 21.5, money in the homestead lender mediation account is appropriated to the Attorney General to make payments as provided in this subdivision. That works. And then subdivision 4 has revenues from the proceeds of fees deposited in the account, but then subdivision 5 on line 21.10, the appropriation of fees imposed under subdivision 4 is appropriated from the general funds of the homestead lender mediation account. I think that 21, I think that sentence is there probably shouldn't be there, involving the general fund.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Filstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was the language that we didn't change. We did change some of the language in state government finance, and I think that's one we just missed. So I don't know if it needs to say the special revenue fund or if that sentence needs to be deleted. But
Mr. Chair and Representative Filstrom, I think the sentence on lines 21.10 through 12 could be deleted because the money in the account is appropriated up on lines 21.4 and 21.5.
Mr. Chair, then I would move that that be deleted.
All right. So that would be from 21.10A through 21.12. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We have that motion. Is there any discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Any more discussion on the bill as a whole? If not, all those in I will renew my motion for House File 354 was recommended to pass to General Register as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll go back up to House File 1805, Representative Atkins. Mr. Chair, yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 1805 to be recommended passed and sent to the General Register or Rules?
Rules.
Rules? General Register.
Even better. Thank you.
To General Register. Thank you, Representative Davis.
Consent calendar, Mr. Chair?
Maybe. Yeah, you look at the authors, it could go there.
Okay, Representative Davids moves House File 1805 with recommendation to pass to General Register. Representative Atkins, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You gave me that look like you didn't recognize me there at first, but I appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. The House File 1805 establishes licensing for firefighters in Minnesota, effective July of 2011. And I assure you and others can attest to this that there is now peace in the firehouse with respect to House File 1805. What it does is provide for licensing. As many of you know, we license just about everybody in Minnesota, lawyers, doctors, cosmetologists, even dog groomers. Yet firefighters, unlike police officers who are licensed, they deal with everything from structural failures to hazardous materials to fighting fires to blood runs to you name it these days. And this provides that for full-time firefighters as of July 2011, that they would have they would be licensed. We, in working with the volunteers, the paid on calls, the part-timers, it's also an option for them. Any of them that are currently firefighters now of any variety would be able to avail themselves of the licensure. It's only the full-timers that would be required to be licensed. They were the ones that brought me the bill because they think it's important. All the others would have it as an option. And there's the various, most of the training that they're already going through right now would be all that they would need to do to qualify to be licensed. With that, I would be willing to stand for any questions or concerns you all may have.
Hey, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Chairman Atkins, the volunteer firefighters are here. You said there's peace in the firehouse?
They are, Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, they are here today, and there is. They do accept that there's. I should mention to some folks that, as I understand it, and I've been hearing from a couple of members that have recently heard from some of their volunteer departments, I don't think they were aware of the changes that were made in the bill, because there was, I think, some word that went out several weeks ago before we made changes to the bill, that now it's the firefighter training board that oversees this. They collect and handle the fees that's involved, and they are on board with the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, thank you. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, what's the big need for licensing? Is
been a problem getting firefighters, or are we trying to fence some people out so it's won't be as enticing for some to go into this career, or what's kind of the big need, and where's the fee getting paid for?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom. I think what it really does is it recognizes the level of training and experience and background that these folks have. As I said at the outset, we license all sorts of professions in Minnesota, and this recognizes the level of professional experience, training, and background that these folks have. They brought it to me. I'm not trying to shove it down their throats. It was the full-time firefighters that brought it to me. They thought it would enhance the profession, and they didn't want to leave folks behind among the volunteers and the paid on calls and so forth, so they made it an option for them as well if they choose to pursue it.
Representative Westrom, a follow-up?
Mr. Chair, what's going to be the process for getting a license, and if you're a part-time firefighter in my area, what's going to stop the creep in 5 years or 10 years from them all of a sudden having to be licensed? So what kind of hassle is it going to be for either of them to get licensed? And ultimately, is it going to disincent some from maybe doing it because in many cases it's a volunteer time commitment anyway?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Representative Westrom, if you look at the bill, first off, anybody that's a firefighter now would be grandparented in. Starting January 1st of 2011, the licensing process would begin, and by July 1st, full-time firefighters would be needing to be licensed. And again, it was the full-time firefighters that brought me the bill. They want this to happen. Among the volunteers, the paid on calls, the part-timers, if they choose at their options that they think this would be to their benefit, then they can also go through the licensing process, which is run by their own board, the Firefighter Training Board, and in most instances, I think all instances, is training that they're already receiving. So if they believe it would be to their benefit, then they can choose to pay that $75 cost and become licensed as well.
Representative Westrom, any more?
Well, Mr. Chair, just the author kind of talked about it with a satirical voice, but I think it's pretty serious. We do license about everything in the state, and I don't think that's something we should be proud of. Most people in business and trying to do their work get sick of the paperwork that comes along with licensing, and so I think they've done a fine job without having to do one more $75 license paperwork process. And Mr. Chair, I guess from a rural perspective, my concern gets to be we move into licensing the full time, and I can only make a best guess that in a few years or 10 years maybe we're going to have some of these same groups, which just because they bring the idea, there's usually some motives behind it, are going to be pursuing our smaller fire departments, even part-time, for being licensed. And eventually you start minimizing who's willing to volunteer to do it. They can't afford to do it, and all of a sudden it drives up costs for our communities because you've got one more requirement to be a part-time firefighter or a full-time firefighter. And the flip side should maybe be true. I've often said in these budget woes times, why don't some of the larger schools or cities adopt what our rural cities have done forever, and that is have some volunteer firefighters to cut your costs but still have security and safety for your communities. You wouldn't have to have 100% complement. You could have 50% of your force volunteers, and maybe even have more firefighters than you have in place right now, and making a license requirement for them isn't going to be going in that direction of saving costs or making it more appealing for volunteers to step forward. And so I think we should be cautious when we go ahead with one more license in the state of Minnesota. I don't think that's a good thing. I think the satirical joke about it isn't something we should be proud of.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Atkins, do you want to respond to that, or just?
No, Mr. Chair, I'd probably say something satirical.
Okay. All right, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Atkins, I just want to ask a question about the board that is going to be handling these licensing, setting up the licenses. This board exists right now. Is that the case?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, yeah.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, it's the intent of the bill for the board not only to issue the licenses, but to deal with revocation of the license, suspension of the license, and deal with complaints and that sort of thing that we deal with other licensure boards.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, to the extent that would be necessary, I would assume that it would be that board that would be making the important decisions, which I might add, they make important decisions now. And there's not to minimize the certification process and the training requirements and so forth that they oversee at this point. They're already doing serious things, and I think that they certainly have the capability to continue to do that.
Representative Dean?
Well, I know that the Board of Dentistry and Medicine and all of those boards deal, I know that a lot of their time, money, and effort goes into dealing with limitations and revocations of licensure, so I just would be cautious that we have enough resources allocated to handle that within the fees that we have, and I don't know that that's the case, but I hope that it certainly is, and know that that's probably going to be something that they're going to be dealing with the time of this board moving forward, so just hope that that's adequately covered with the dollars that you got for it on the line.
Okay. All right. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, do other states have this?
Representative Atkins.
Chair, Representative Ruth. I understand it. I heard an indirect conversation that there are other states that do. I can phone a friend if you'd like that may know that with greater certainty, but I heard a conversation in which apparently other states do in fact license their firefighters.
Representative Rude?
Well, if you did find out that information, I'd be curious. Representative Dean and I sit on the licensing subcommittee, and I don't know if it's because it didn't come to our committee, I don't know if it needed to, but the whole issue of licensing is more, there are more concerns, I think, than MECI, and actually what Representative Western started to raise some of my concerns as well, but I can follow up with you later.
Okay. Thank you. Representative McNamara, you had a question? No? Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the fiscal note in our packet is for the first engrossment. We have the second engrossment in front of us, and the first engrossment shows the savings to the state of $135,000 in the first year. But reading the bill, it shows that all fees collected must be deposited to the state treasury and credited due to the special revenue accounts. Has that been changed since the fiscal note was done, or?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, and I'm sure somebody will jump on me if I misstate this, but my understanding is that the only change, the funds are all still the same. There was some concern that these funds, once they came into the state, they might be appropriated by some other folks to use to solve our general fund budget issue. And so we wanted to make sure that the firefighters' money would remain the firefighters' money to take care of this licensing program, and that was the basis for the special account. But otherwise, all of the figures will remain the same, and to Representative Dean's concern, and I'm sure your concern as well, is that there have not been reservations about there being enough money. The firefighter training folks, I've now heard this bill, even though we haven't been in the licensing committee or subcommittee, I think we've been in virtually every other committee, so the bill's been heard multiple times, and there has not been any reservation about there being enough money to pay for the cost of running the licensing program.
Representative Fulmer,
well, Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Marks can help me, but I see a disconnect between the bill and the fiscal note that I have in front of me.
Okay. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, it's actually been a couple of weeks, I think, since I've read this bill. I believe, though, there was a change made somewhere along the way that sent all the money to the general, or to the special revenue fund, excuse me. And I think the fiscal note would not be accurate showing that going to the general fund anymore. That's what I recall, but I don't remember what the change was in the language that would have done that.
Representative Holbert?
And Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, And looking at the fiscal note, it shows a net of $135,000 the first year and then $1,000 the next 2 years. Hey, did you ever consider maybe reducing the cost of the initial license so you wouldn't have $135,000 in excess money that you don't really need to administer the program and only collect that which you need?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, frankly, no. What I did was I spoke with the folks that would be involved both in paying the fee and the folks that would be involved in administering the license. And they were in concert with respect to the amount of the fee and then to the extent that they have responsibilities going along with that, along the lines of those set forward by Representative Dean, that there'd be available funds to take care of those sorts of purposes. But the payor and the payee, I guess, I believe that that's a reasonable amount of money to charge.
So, to what degree will those fees be being paid by municipalities versus individuals?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, it's the individual is responsible for the fee. To the extent that they bargain to have the municipality, or anybody else for that matter, pay the $75 fee for them, I guess they can try that. But it says in the bill that actually the individual is responsible for it.
Okay. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would we expect an updated fiscal note before this is brought up on the House floor?
Mr. Atkins, Representative Atkins or Ms. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I'll request one. It'll take a couple days.
Mr. Chair, I'll do one if you'd like. It may not be right, but I'll...
We appreciate that offer.
I think actually, Mr. Chair, and without being satirical, I think the answer is truly that the money, and you look at the very last portion of the bill underlined 4.21, the only change since that time has been that we've placed the fees in the special account rather than the general fund. So wherever it says the money's going into or coming out of the general fund, it would actually be coming out of going into and coming out of a special account. I don't want people to think that there's any major change in the amount of, or any change at all in the amount of money or how it's being spent or where it's coming from. It's literally just a special account that would be set up for it to go into and come out of.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'll just make 2 points here. First of all, we've had the last couple meetings here, either fiscal notes not here or not be up to date, and if this is only the Means Committee and we're supposed to look at fiscal issues, it gets a little frustrating after a while. The second issue is that you specify on page 4 of your bill under the fees that they can only be used to pay the costs incurred under this section. So if you rack up $135,000 of excess revenue and you can't spend it because you're only using it to administer a program that, according to the fiscal note, costs $15,000 in the first year, then it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Okay. Any other questions on this bill? If not, Representative Davids renews his motion that House File 1805 be passed and recommended to pass and go to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy, House File 723.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the bill.
All right, Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson moves House File 723 and recommended to pass and move to General Register. Representative Murphy, present your bill, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 723. 723 is the omnibus pension bill, which was put together by the Pension Commission over the past year since the last time we appeared before you. And the two parts of the pension bill that has to do with state financing is in any way is the Article 7, which is Minscue-related retirement provisions, which authorizes Minscue Board to establish an early separation incentive program consisting of either cash incentives or employer contributions to the MSRS, post-retirement health savings plan, or a combination of the two. And this would not have to be the same on every campus. It would depend on how much money the campuses have for this incentive, or, and also what kind of stress the campus is under because of the budgeting for the next year. In many cases in the Minsky system, teachers are going to have to be laid off or encouraged to work part-time or to retire. And this would be an option for them. It's not mandatory. And the individual campus could set up whatever program that they chose to with their own money, not with the system money. And then Article 6 is the teacher retirement plan benefit and funding changes under the TRA proposal, which would start in 2012, in which contributions for the teachers would go up, go in, and there would be increases in the employer share through increased state aid that would be imposed. This provision was carried by Representative Cheeson, and I can attempt to answer any questions that you might have.
All right. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Questions on the bill, House File 723. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be for Representative Carlson, who's had the pleasure of sitting in on the what some of us refer to as the ABC meeting with the leaders on targets, et cetera, and in the absence of Representative Solberg. This has quite large tails. I'm just wondering how we're doing on tails target. Is it still a goal, or?
Representative Carlson.
Chairman. It's something that we're watching, and I would describe it as a goal, but it's one that none of the three entities is totally achieved, be it the governor or the senator of the House at this point.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, of the bills that have already passed, my understanding was is that they had tails targets to begin with. Is anybody tracking that, and are we within them, or have we blown through tails targets on the bills that we set that we passed so far?
Representative Carlson.
I think I'd have to defer that question. I don't know if Mr. Marks is here. We're tracking them, obviously. We know. I don't know if I can give you a number.
Mr. Chair, I don't see him here. I can touch him offline about that, too. I'm just looking for a little update, and I can certainly talk to him later about that as well. Thank
you. You bet. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the second part you described, the TRA, can you give just a little bit more overview of what we're doing with that and what the cost is, what's the need for it?
Sure.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, the need is to restore financial stability to the teacher pension fund for long-term sustainability. Right now, TRA is under 80%, which is kind of the floor, the ceiling, or whatever. Whatever, you don't want to be below 80%, and they have passed it. Last spring, when I came before with the omnibus pension bill, I was talking about the post fund for the MSRS, PERA, and TRA, and that meant putting the retired teachers back in, or the retired employees back in with the active employees, the people that were not yet retired, and to merge their, it was to allow for the process of merging the retired with the active to prevent this instability. I told you at the committee meeting that I didn't expect that to happen for, if it had to happen for at least 3 years. Well, it happened. It happened as of, will happen as of July. It's something that we did not anticipate having, and with the fall of the markets on our investments, all our funds have are less secure than they were when I spoke to you last spring. But TRA is more or less than the others, and we want to provide more stability for them, and this would do that because it allows for increased contributions. In other times when we've hit hard times and funds have been declining, we have provided for increased contributions on behalf of the employees and the employers, and that's what this sets in place to happen starting in 2012. And it would start with a phased in, and it would go up to 2016 before it was fully funded. And the increased contributions would help.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Westrom.
Chair, Representative Murphy. How much of an increase are we talking about, and is this all being paid in from teachers actively teaching, or what's the cost to the state or the school districts to match this? And
it's
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, it starts at, we're at 5.5% current law, and it would go to 6.6% in August of 2011, and the same for the employer. And then in August of 2012, it would go to 6.5%, and in 2013, it would go to 7%, and then in 2014 it would go to 7.5%.
Okay.
And then there's an employer match.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that was my next question. The school districts are going to have to also raise that 2% contribution as well?
That's correct.
So in total we're looking to raise...
It would come from the... The way that it's written now, it would come from increased state aid. There is a proposal out there that maybe it could be levied for, but we haven't gone there yet.
Okay. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, one way or another, it's going to be a 4% hit to 2% from the teachers, which ultimately they get back. 2% from the state or the local district or the local property taxpayers, that by voting for this we're making that kind of a financial obligation to somebody to make this. Are they also reducing some benefits to bring back solvency, or how does that square? And let me just ask a roundabout question here with how does this, I thought we bailed out the Minneapolis Teachers Fund and merged them a few years ago. Is that the same fund we're talking about here, or is this a different fund?
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, this is not a bailout. This is solving a problem that's going to happen. This is because it's going to happen because of the downturn in our economy. To talk about the benefits, it does have an enhanced benefit in it, just as all previous proposals that have been before us in recent times. And the enhanced benefit would be to, when the time comes, those people that were hired after 1989 would have to work until they're 62. Instead of 66, and then they would be eligible for full retirement without pension or without penalty if they had worked over 30 years in the system. So there is that enhanced benefit. The other questions.
How does this, is this the same fund we dealt with a few years ago, or is this a separate fund?
This is the same fund, but when the Minneapolis teachers came in, the state brought money with them. And so this is not happening because the Minneapolis teachers were brought into TRA.
Okay. But Representative Weston.
But Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that you must admit was a bailout back 05, 06, I think it was, we did.
This is not a bailout.
But Representative Murphy, we were told that that was going to make the fund solvent. I understand their funds are probably down because of the markets. My funds are down. Everybody sitting at this table funds are down. That is just kind of the ebbs and flows of the market. How is this different than what everybody else in society is feeling? You just get less if you have to start taking a retirement when the markets are down. Is that not how it works?
Representative Murphy.
This is not a bailout. When the Minneapolis teachers came into TRA, the state brought money to the table with them. TRA needs the stability of increased funding. The teachers are saying, we will increase our funds, our contribution to help that situation. If we do not acknowledge a solution at this time, we can go on. But when we do acknowledge that we need a solution, it is going to be much costlier.
Okay. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, one parting question. Rule of 90 or Rule of 92 has been talked about. That's nowhere in this bill. Is that something that you're contemplating, or maybe an amendment that comes forward? What's the status of that issue?
Representative Murphy.
I said that, Mr. Chair, as part of the proposal, there was an enhanced benefit of if after 30 years and the age of 62, they could retire without penalty.
Okay. All right. Representative Nelson. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I'm wondering, do you know what the total unfunded liability for the citizens of Minnesota is for the public pensions that the state's responsible for? Do you know approximately? And then could you say, what's the date of the estimate of that?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Dicker, you maybe know? I don't know, Representative McNamara, but I'll make a note of that question so that when I discuss this again, I'll have an answer.
Okay. Representative McNamara?
Well, I'm wondering, I see them all up there. Does nobody know the current estimate of the unfunded liability for the state of Minnesota? And then what would the date be of that calculation as of what day in the month?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Martin says that the most recent one would be July 1, 2008.
Representative McNamara.
And what would that estimate be of the unfunded liability?
Representative Murphy.
It's not a number that we have. There are 13 funds with different numbers that we can't remember.
Okay.
Okay. Representative McNamara.
And Representative Murphy, I respect the fact that you may not know what all 13 of them are added up, but I would strongly recommend that when we get to the floor, that we know what the unfunded liability are for the citizens of Minnesota for the public pension. And the fact that it's based on last July, 08, the market is down substantially since then. Representative Westrom, we talked about the unfunded liability a couple of years ago when the market was riding high. This is huge, folks. We have to recognize that we have to do business different in this state to deal with these public employees' pensions. They deserve to know they're secured, and we have to evaluate what we're doing. We just can't do business as usual as we have in the past. Many folks in the private sector have changed how they look at pensions and what they're doing so they don't have this kind of liability on their balance sheet. This is all falling on the citizens of Minnesota who themselves 401k, to take Representative Holberg's words, have now become 201k's, and now they're going to be 101k's because of the liability of their neighbor's public pension. So I hope, Representative Murphy, that you can get that number, because I think it needs to shell shock all of us of how serious this is. This is really, really huge. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mac, Representative Mac. Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, just to that point, maybe could the appropriate staff get the committee that information beforehand the next day or two?
Yeah, hang on. Representative Murphy, maybe have some information on it.
It's about $11.6 billion, Mr. Chair. The unfunded liability of all the funds are about $11.6 billion.
Okay, Representative McNamara. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Murphy. What I would ask, $11.6 billion is the unfunded liability in July of 2008. So if we knew the corpus of that, we could make some calculations for, say, the market as of today or as of yesterday relative to July of 2008. So what are we talking about?
Mr. Representative Chair, Murphy. For that $11.6 billion, the assets are about $51 billion. $51 billion.
So
Representative McNamara.
So if I could, Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm not exactly sure, but my recollection is this is an investment that's followed a lot of it close to the stock market. So if we're talking about July of 2008, if I'm not mistaken, it generally doesn't quite ebb and flow with the market, somewhat slower on the upside and definitely slower on the downside. The $11.6 billion is way, way higher today based on current market situation than what we're talking about. If you were talking about a $51 billion corpus in July of 2008, it could easily be that number that we're talking about is way much higher, I would imagine, probably in the high teens of billions of dollars. We have 5 million Minnesotans to divide, or 6 million. It's huge.
I wouldn't wager a guess on that. I know that in the last month and a half, things have gotten better.
Okay.
So it goes up, then it goes down. Up and down. Up!
All right, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe Mr. Vicker or someone can respond. When we talk about the unfunded liability, there's also the time frame in which the funds are to be funded, and I think we had some recent changes in terms of the number of years, and I think that's important when we talk about the unfunded liability, and maybe Mr. Bicker could comment on that in terms of when they have to be fully funded.
Mr. Chair.
And how we define being fully funded.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, most of them now are about 2035, between 2035 and 2040, 2030.
So
they're closer to about 2035.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, my only point then is that when we talked about that 11.6, we also have to talk about that timeline as well.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the gentleman with Chair Murphy there. And
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is Mr. Martin, who's our leader for pensions for the Pension Commission.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Davis.
I guess my, and I'm sorry I came in kind of the middle of the discussion here, maybe it's already been talked about, but we're talking about July 08 numbers. Well, that's ancient history in the market. Wouldn't we know what the unfunded liabilities were as of closing today?
Mr. Martin.
Chair, I'm Larry Martin. I'm the Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions. We know what the market value of the assets is on a very regular basis. It's the liability figure that gets calculated once per year. And that's when you ask about the unfunded pension liabilities, you need to know both the liabilities and the assets. If we know the assets on a very regular basis, in some cases for these plans, essentially daily.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Martin, the assets were the $50 billion number we're talking about, and that's as of today?
Our representative, the $51 billion was as of July 1, 2008, the same as the liability.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I also serve on the Pension Commission with Representative Murphy, and when the question about the TRA, when the Minneapolis Teachers has moved in there, at that time, the TRA was, if I believe the number is right, was close to 100% funded. And so a lot of this that's going on is because of the drop in the market that's been going on now. It's not to do to anything else. And so a lot of these funds were close to being fully funded for their liabilities. But at least a drop since then.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question on the on page 13 of the fiscal note. It talks about the cost of the employer portion of the contribution rate increases would be funded by an increase in general education state aid. In 2012, it's estimated at almost $22 million. I guess my question is, if this is going to be funded out of education aid, I don't recall if that was part of the education targets in the, we did 2010-11 and 2011-12. How do I reconcile that, Representative Murphy? Is that part of the budget in state education finance? I don't remember that. Maybe I missed it.
Mr. Chair, it is not part of the education target.
It is not part of the education target. All right.
Well,
Representative Demmer.
Can I ask? Well, it says it's going to be funded by an increase in general education state aids in here. Is that an assumption that may not be true then, or did it get missed? How do I reckon? I mean, this is $22 million. It's not a small. This is not a rounding error.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, it did not get missed. It did not get included.
It did not get included. All right. Representative Demmer.
Well, maybe I'll have to ask further questions later then, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chair, on page 97 of the bill is the language for the aid adjustment.
You want to read that, Representative Demmer, and we'll move on. Representative Westrom, I believe, has another question. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, two questions. One for the Demmer question, maybe more just an observation, but we've got potential for the Minnesota Miracle in 2014 that passed the House bill. We've got another 20-some million in this that's not accounted for. We are setting ourselves up and the taxpayers of the state for a huge cliff if we don't rein in some of what's going on here, but maybe that'll get fixed somewhere else. But I think people ought to take note of that. Mr. Martin, could you give us a relatively recent asset value of end of April, yesterday, something recent? And would it then be fair to just take the $51 billion plus the 11.6 and the difference between the current asset and that number would be about the liability? Is that a rough estimate?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think I would have to defer to Howard Victor, who's the Executive Director of the State Board of Investment, where most of these dollars are invested, and he actually tabs that on a daily or a weekly basis.
Okay. He is here.
If he's here, Mr. Chair, could we get that relatively recent update?
Mr. Bicker, thank you for joining us. Please state your name for the tape, and if you need the question repeated or you've had it, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Howard Bicker. I'm the Director of the State Investment Board. First of all, Mr. Martin talked about $51 million. That's all the assets and various pension plans in the state of Minnesota. State Board of Investment is not responsible for all of those assets. So there's a couple billion or so, $3 billion outside of our control. So I really can't tell you exactly what that number is. Our comparable numbers are down approximately $10 billion.
Okay. Representative Westrum.
So, Mr. Bicker, rough math here. I assume the liability would be about $10 billion higher than if the asset is down, or doesn't it correlate that way?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, it doesn't correlate directly, but you're in the ballpark, maybe 8, but, you know, if we were 11 or 19 or 20, it's a big number.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Demmer, as you...
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm going to have to think this through. And this is the outband, I understand, of 2012 and 13. So with the additional cost in 2012 of almost $22 million and almost $46 million in 13, in the outbiennium, we're looking at an additional expenditure of almost $68 million to education. To fund this, and we didn't talk about that in education finance, and I know we're looking at two bienniums out 4 years as we look at these targets, and this was included in there, so I think that might be something we'd have to update in terms of looking at our four-year targets.
Representative Carlson.
When Mr. Bicker was there, Mr. Chairman, I wanted him to respond to the point that I made earlier about 2035 is what Representative Murphy pointed out, and I think that the time sequence here is relevant to this discussion, and by some of the questions, I'm not sure that people look at or are looking at pensions in terms of the long term, the history of investments, and where we're headed by 2035, and the advantage of putting money in up front today, as the bill is described, when those contributions start to come forward. And maybe, Mr. Bicker, you could just give us a real quick 101 on the history time sequence and what we mean by an unfunded liability and how that 2035 plays in.
Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman and members, the reality is we look at these assets on a very long-term basis, and, you know, it's been less than a wonderful market over the last 9 months or so. And to Representative Carl's point, when you have money in a plan, anything, but earlier rather than later, you have a chance to compound on those assets. Now, the reality is we were negatively compounded over the last 9 months, but we have numbers, clean numbers, as we call them, back to 1-1 of 1980. And through the end of March of this year, okay, and that's through almost all the bad markets, that doesn't give us April, which is actually a good month, the State Board has compounded on an annual basis of 9.25%. So, you know, we're going to have bad years, and I tell you, we got as bad as you're going to get, hopefully, over the last year or so. And including those numbers, we are still compounding at more than the actuarial assumed rate, which is 8.5. We must make 8.5 to, quote-unquote, fund the plan. Will we meet these targets? We hope so. And when you take, you know, very time-sensitive looks at these assets, like right now, it's about as bad as you want to look. I mean, we're probably as unfunded as we're going to get. Hopefully, I mean, in April, we were up about 9%. We'll see how it goes for the rest of the year. As Mr. Martin said, we look at the actuarial data once a year. That's June 30th. So that will give us a new point of reference. We had actuarial data as of June of 08. As of June of 08, the picture was significantly different than it is today. But I really don't know where it's going to be on June 30th. Hopefully it will be significantly better than it is today. I can't tell you that. All we can do is tell you that from an investment perspective, we look at these assets over a 30-year time horizon. We don't look at what's going to happen next week. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, the only one that's worse than us is the weatherman. And, you know, as far as predicting what's going to happen in the future. But we think we will make sufficient returns to support the pensions that are on the books of the state of Minnesota. But when you take time, one point in time, you can prove pretty much whatever you want to prove. So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, if that's what you're trying to look at, I'll try to respond to any other questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Bicker. Any other questions from Mr. Bicker? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bicker, I don't serve on the Pension Commission, so I really appreciate your astute knowledge and being here. It's very, very helpful. Is the 9.25% compounded since 1980, that is impressive. Is that as of last July, or is that somewhat relative as of today?
Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, it's through March of this year. Okay. So it's a month old.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Bicker, that's even more impressive. Because a month ago, you wouldn't have been talking about $18 or $19 billion of a shortfall. You'd have been substantial.
We'd have another billion or two in the equation.
Yeah, more, at least, Mr. Chair. So, if I understand, Mr. Bicker, we assume 8.5, but for us to reach that, doesn't the fund need to be fully funded? We're not reaching 8.5 with the partial funding that we're at now, though.
Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara, that is true. When you have an unfunded liability, effectively, you have to earn more than you assume. Great, because you got to earn money on money you don't have. But at 9.25, you know, when the funds were 90% funded, we were fine. And, you know, it's we've had years when we've been up 20. We're going to have years when we're it's negative. But that's why we try to look at this over the long term.
Okay. Representative David, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the witness, has the state board investment strategies changed in the last 9 months? I mean, have you taken some out to, like, money market investment grade bonds? Have you gotten a little more careful right now to kind of wait this thing out? That's question one. And question two is in the good times, I believe that the percentages that people were getting for increases was quite substantial. Has that backed off at all?
Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, to your second question first, as far as benefit increases for retirees going forward, they are now capped at 2.5%. So that issue where increases were 7, 8, 9, 10%, those days are gone. As far as what are we doing in the investment market, when you run a multi-billion dollar pension plan, as the state of Minnesota has, one thing you have to do, and you have to do, and that is have discipline. And we have long-term asset allocation targets, and we have tried to stay pretty close to those. You know, people say, are you going to change when things, you know, in the next 6 months, 9 months? Excuse me. A lot of people in our business are really saying, we're sitting back waiting for the next 6 months or so to see what the rules are. We got a new world out there. I mean, I used to tell people, I used to go to New York and spend 4 or 5 days with investment bankers. I can't do that anymore. The reason is there isn't any investment bankers left. I mean, all the investment banks are now just banks. Now, that's not necessarily bad, but the world has changed. And the rules on investments are going to change over the next 2, 3, 4 years. But we have maintained our discipline. We've maintained pretty much our asset allocation. We have not taken any high-risk stuff, but we haven't made any, you know, we haven't gone after the golden goose, so to speak, in the last couple months. But we have maintained our discipline.
Thank you, Mr. Bicker. Representative David?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for Mr. Bicker? Yes, Representative Denver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, at the at the risk of not sounding very intelligent about this, last year, you know, we capped the additions that there could be put on. We refunded. If I remember right, we thought we were good to go for quite a long time.
and with the actuarial, if I remember right, 30 years it was going to take for us to get, based on the projection back then, if my memory serves me, about 30 years and we'd be solvent and 100% funded, but everything was good to go. I realized we had a big downturn in the economy, and that really affected all of us, including the pensions. Assuming that the economy comes back, and quite frankly, we've seen some retrenchment here in the last number of months, with the increases that we're looking at here, which is, in the next couple, 3 years, we're looking at over a 35% increase in contribution from school districts, as well as, I believe, some increase from the employees themselves. What does that do for the returns and the amount that's in the fund, assuming the markets come back and assuming these going in? Do we then increase the rates of increase they get from the 2.5%? Do we need this to maintain the 2.5%? Can you give me a little perspective here over the 30 years like we looked at last year and we thought we had it fixed?
Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, as far as the 2.5% goes for retirees on an annual basis, that's based into the actuarial required return and your unfunded liability. So those are all based into the data that you're seeing that Representative Murphy and Mr. Martin have given you. The reality is if the markets come back, we'll be better funded earlier rather than later. We said we were in pretty good shape, a year, 18 months ago. But a lot of people think they were in good shape. This is not just a state of Minnesota issue. It's an issue for almost every pension plan, whether it's private or public, around the country. And I really think it's an issue that we all are going to have to deal with going forward. And I really think to try to reach decisions on that today are troubling, because we don't know where we are yet. We have to see how this economy is going to come out of this. We're going to see, how the plans that Washington has put forth in the sense of stimulus and bailing out banks, and we'll have to see how the world, I mean, we are now a global economy. We're going to have to see how everything looks in 6 months or 9 months. It's not going to cure itself in a couple of months. This isn't a normal recession. This is a big one. This is a big deal. And there's been some major, major reactions by the public sector as it relates to this. And we have to wait and see how all this is going to play out and then make some decisions. At least that would be my recommendation, that the legislature and other policymakers look at that in a year or two.
Representative Davis.
Thank you. And to the person testifying, I'm always concerned here because you said, wait and see. We don't know where we're at now. Well, in 6 months to 9 months, in this business, you never know where you're at.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, what I'm saying is we're seeing the stock market. We were making decisions on stocks on an ongoing basis. We're making decisions on bonds on an ongoing basis. But the rules of the game will probably change. What kind of multiples are the market going to pay on earnings for stocks going forward? We don't know that. Those are things that will play out over the next 6 or 9 months. We don't know, what are going to be the spreads between treasuries and corporate bonds. Some of these things are going to change because of what's happened. We're going to have to see how the federal government is going to do. It's issued massive amounts of debt. We're going to have to see whether this is going to lead to inflation and what ramifications that may have. We're going to see, and if I was sitting here 2 years ago or 15 years ago, I would be basically saying we're going to still have to wait to see how things play out. This has been just a little bigger issue.
Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you go through your calculations and your scenarios, we've gone up a little bit the last couple months. I think we're going down to 5,500. I think when you take into
account... God, I hope you're wrong.
I hope I am too, but you make contingency plans for things like this, because about 4 weeks ago, the Treasury printed $1.2 trillion in new money just for money. Mm-hmm. So it's out there. So the dollar you have in your pocket is worth less today than it was then. The proposed budget in D.C. takes our debt-to-GDP ratio from 6.7 or 2.8 to 12%. How does that affect them? We're going to have massive inflation. How, you know, we're going down, if we go down to 50 pounds, do you play these war games so you can kind of see where we're at? I mean, this is pretty big stuff.
Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we always talk to various organizations that are in the, I mean, you know, the Goldman Sachs of the world and the Barclays and, you know, Wilshire's. And, I mean, we're talking to their people, their economists, on an ongoing basis. I mean, we don't have in-house economists in our shop. We have to depend on Wall Street and various investment banks. But we're always talking to them. We're always trying to see what they think is going to happen in the market. We don't make a lot of quick changes in our direction because at that point in time, only the people are getting richer at brokers.
Okay. And thank you to the witness. I hope I'm wrong, too. I really do.
Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Vickers, my pension plan at my other job just required us to toss in an extra 60 cents per hour out of our paychecks. So I should have just told the actuarial or the investment bankers that we should have waited 6 to 9 months.
Representative Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney.
I could use that money.
As far as, you know, what goes into various contribution rate increases, those are policy decisions that are going to be reached by the director of the retirement system and the legislature. The reality is that is not the job of the State Board of Investment to determine those. Our responsibility is to do invest whatever you decide is the contribution rate.
I'm just trying to get back at the bankers.
I know.
Okay, Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Along that line of questioning, Representative Murphy, how did we determine the 0.5% for each of the next 4 years needed to be increased from the state's, from the school districts, I should say, contribution? How did we determine that the school districts need to put in an extra 0.5% each of the next 4 years? In light of the testimony that says we kind of are in a wait and see to know where we're at here, how did we determine that?
I think
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I think at this time that was what we thought the traffic would bear.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Traffic will bear, Representative Murphy. You mean let's just put more in and see how it works out, or was there some sort of calculation done to say if we do this, then here's how we'll end up?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I wasn't in on the discussions at that point in time, and so I don't know, but that's the number that I have heard from the beginning.
Well, can I ask, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, who makes that determination? Who picks the numbers? If you didn't, as the author, where did that come from? The Pension Commission? Did it come from another committee of the legislature? Can you tell me where the number came from?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, it came from the TRA that proposed this.
Okay. Representative Demmer? Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Just on this, I welcome all those questions that I didn't know the answers to, but Mr. Bicker always takes the moment to be a teacher, and I appreciate that a lot. This is a bill that, and you pointed out that it does not have a target and it does not have, it's changing. It has the possibility of changing, and I beg your indulgence as it goes, if it goes forth, because there are many eyes on this and there are still discussions taking place about it, and I appreciate your willingness to help it go on its journey.
All right. Thank you, Representative Murphy. If there are no other questions, Representative Nelson renews his motion that House File 723, with a recommendation to pass to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it. The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Murphy. We'll take up House File 796 next, Representative Morrow. All right. Representative Morrow, House File 796. I will move House File 796 with recommendation to pass to the General Register. Representative Morrow, present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, as you can see, this is a bill that empties rooms. This is, actually, I'm not sure how this bill gets to this point. At one point, member, this is a bill that allows the Department of Management and Budget to issue private sale small denomination bonds. Essentially, folks could individually buy bonds in the state of Minnesota. That money would go to allowing the state to issue general obligation bonds. This bill had a fiscal note at one point, members. This bill has been amended since that fiscal note. It eliminates the zero coupon option. Therefore, there is no fiscal note for this bill. Again, this is a policy bill that allows the department to choose to issue these bonds. This idea came to me from construction companies and construction workers down in the Mankato area who wanted to be able to invest in work projects, bricks and mortar projects that would be built by the state of Minnesota. So, Mr. Chair, members, I'd be very happy to stand for questions.
Okay. I do have a fiscal note here, but you're saying the changes have been made since that point that have removed the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, members, you'll see the date of that fiscal note, I think, is 210 or 211. This bill was amended. It was amended again last night in finance. We've removed the zero coupon option, and you'll see that the fiscal note is primarily about what the debt service would be between the one type of bond and the zero coupon type of bond. That's where the money for the fiscal note comes from. It's also mentioned in the fiscal note in front of you about $10,000 to $20,000 for marketing of these bonds, but that cost wouldn't be incurred unless the department actually decided to market or even issue this type of bond. Those costs would be paid out of the appropriation for the bond.
Okay, Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrow, if you're not offering zero coupon bonds anymore, can you explain why we still have the language on page 1, line 17?
Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, last evening this bill was amended. It was amended at line 17, the word "for the purposes of this section" was removed. And then we left the option that if they had a zero coupon bond, what the department had asked is that if they did decide in the future to issue zero coupon bonds, that they'd be given this latitude. But that's why we removed the zero coupon form that had originally appeared in line 1.9. So this was simply, Representative Holbert, if the Department of Management and Budget in the future decided that a zero coupon bond was marketable, that it would have the authority to do so, but that the denomination would have to be the compounded maturity of the bond. From the original bill, Representative Holbert, the department was required to do zero coupon bonds if it issued any.
Representative Holberg.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, are zero coupon bonds an option?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, they remain an option for the commissioner. The fiscal note was calculated on the basis that the zero coupon was the only option.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Other questions? If not, I renew my motion that House File 796 with recommendation to pass to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Mark. Next we've got Senate File 727, Representative Fritz. All right. I will move Senate File 727 with recommendation to pass to the General Register. Representative Fritz, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This Senate file transfers money, $134,000, from the administration to the Department of Human Services for the purpose of getting federal participation, financial participation, to help groups like a self-advocacy group for the disabled community, like Advocating Change Together. I have with me today Rick Cardenas from that organization to help and answer any questions, if you would have any.
Okay. Are there any questions? No questions?
Well, that was too easy.
All right. There's no questions. I'll renew my motion that Senate File 727 be with a recommendation to pass the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next is House File 1053, Representative Simon. Yeah, there he is. All right, I will move House File 1053 with recommendation to pass the general register. Representative Simon, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. This is the 21st Century Voting Bill. This is its last stop before the floor. It basically does two categories of things. First, it enables the Secretary of State's office to have access to and use a number of databases that will help sort of cleanse and clean, I suppose, the voter rolls, allow for a little more accuracy. And then the second thing that it does is it changes the presumption on our motor voter law from an opt-in to an opt-out. Those are the two categories of things that the bill does. In terms of the money, which is the reason this committee is hearing it, there is a fiscal note, as you'll see, of somewhere north of $300,000, but all of that, all 100% of that, is covered by federal funds from HAVA, from the Help America Vote Act. So there's no cost to the state. This will actually reduce costs to the counties, because right now, especially this last election, as all of us know from experience, there's always a rush of same-day registrants. And this would drastically reduce those, because people would be presumed registered from the time that they renew their driver's licenses. And so I have with me, I don't think we have enough copies to hand out, but if you name a county, I can tell you what that means for that particular county. But it's a great savings to the counties, a net savings to them, and I have free support. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Representative Simon. Questions on the bill, specifically to the finance part of the bill? Yes, Representative Mahoney.
It's not really the finance part of it. It's not to the finance. So I'll ask Representative Simon a little later on it. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions to the bill, the finance part of it? If not, I will renew my motion that House File 1053 be passed. With recommendation to pass the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails.
Never.
Thank you, Representative Simon. Okay. Okay. The next one we'll be bringing up is Senate File 1331 with Representative Winkler. Representative Kahn is still chairing a committee, I guess. And somebody has gone to get him, so he should be here shortly. So visit amongst yourselves. Well, Andy Demmer wants to sing for us. While we're here, let's approve the minutes. We haven't done that yet. Okay, Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion on that? If not, all those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't be averse to having somebody from the Secretary of State's office begin to explain the fiscal components of that bill while we wait for Representative Winkler.
File 1351. Is somebody here from there?
Thing.
Beth Fraser, is that right?
Yes.
All right, Beth.
Mr. Chair, Beth Fraser with the Office of Secretary of State.
So, one second. Let me move the bill. I'll move Senate File 1331 with recommendation to pass the general register. So, go ahead and start, Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is basically an omnibus elections bill, and it includes three bills that did have fiscal notes, one related to early voting, one related to online voter registration, and a third, which was the base bill, related to absentee ballot changes. Between the three bills, the total cost is about $325,000, but again, all of that can be paid for through the Federal Help America Vote Act Fund. So there's no cost to the state, and all of the bills will result in substantial savings for local election officials.
Okay. Questions for Mitch Frazier? Yeah, Representative Colbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Frazier, are there any ongoing costs for any of these things that I'm assuming at some point the FAVA money is going to run out? And so are there any ongoing costs that would contribute to the sales budget for the Secretary of State's office?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Colbert, the only ongoing cost is about $2,000 a year, which when the HAVA money runs out, we'll find a way to absorb.
All right.
Okay. Any other questions? No. All right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Frazier. And we will wait for Representative Winkler, who we believe is on the way.
We could just pretend it was Representative
Lilly. All right. If anyone has any questions that they do feel the need to ask Representative Winkler, I would hold off voting until he is here. But if everyone is okay with it, I'd move it forward.
Here you come. I don't have any questions. So.
Okay. Representative Winkler, thank you for joining us. We have already discussed the financial implications of your bill, Senate File 1331.
Mr. Chair, I have about a 15-minute presentation that I would like to...
All those in favor? Go ahead, Representative Winkler. If there's something you'd like to cover in your bill, go ahead.
Absolutely not, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions? If not, all those in favor of... I'll renew my motion that Senate File 1331 be passed with recommendation to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Winkler, for running up here quick.
We might want to know if Representative Hahn's in the same meeting with him.
I'm going to go down and make sure we see the form, and then he'll come right up.
All right. Is there anything we can cover on House Bill 1219 while we wait? Yeah, Representative Mark, or not Representative, I would hate to give you a salary demotion like that.
Mr. Chair, just one point on the fiscal note. The fiscal note that's in here is also out of date, but what the amendments to the bill starts it in fiscal 12 rather than fiscal 10, so on the fiscal note, basically ignore the first 2 years and start in fiscal 12.
All right, everyone got that? Thank you very much. I will move House File 1219 with recommendation to pass to the General Register so we can discuss it amongst ourselves, if you like, while we wait.
We're pretty well
done.
So will we be meeting tomorrow?
No. All right. While we're waiting, we don't know if when the next meeting will be, so it will be at the call of the chair. So we won't be having one. We won't be scheduling one right at this moment. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So theoretically, we could be done this evening.
Well, there's lots of theories out there.
Vicious
rumors, too. Representative Carlson.
There could be some bills that possibly could come forward in finance. There are still bills in the Finance Committee, but at this point in time, we haven't scheduled any meetings, but I told members that that could happen.
Stay tuned.
But we've pretty well cleaned out the system as of last night.
And the joke used to be that there was more vehicles than Denny Hecker, but now the joke is that there's more vehicles than Denny Hecker used to have.
I didn't use, Chairman, the word vehicle, but you never know what's down the road, but we are pretty well done.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know. I mean, our side of the aisle is fully informed and ready to vote on this particular piece of legislation. We see. Oh, here she is.
There she is, the one we've been waiting for. All right. Representative Kahn, I have already moved your House File 1219 with recommendation to pass the general register. And so if you would please present your bill and as much close to the financial implications and impacts as you can, please.
The financial, first of all, this comes, the reason to do this is for economic competitiveness in the state. One of the things that we've seen is that every major, let me just say, not say every, but many major corporations are doing this. The people who brought the issue to me is the IFO from Minshew, because they're at a particular disadvantage because all of the surrounding, I think, surrounding states, certainly Wisconsin and Iowa institutions, do give domestic partner benefits, and the University of Minnesota does, and just about, and most of the private colleges, I think all the private colleges, in fact, except the Catholic private colleges, do it. And the issues that we brought was a basic fairness, the financial issues, and there were arguments about whether the fiscal impact is correct or not on the CGIC fund. It certainly doesn't jive at all with the state had this for a while. It was negotiated by employees, and then the legislature came in and changed it and said that they couldn't have it. So they were very much smaller numbers, but there were enough, our computations showed that there were enough reserves in the CGIC fund to cover this, but just to not, we decided not to argue the financial issues, so we just put the deadline out so that it wouldn't interfere with this negotiation session. So it was considered just to be a basic matter of fairness for employees. There are employees working side by side. Some can get health benefits for a partner, others can't. And this is just to put that bit of fairness in place, and also to for the economic benefit of the state. And the reason, we have already passed this has passed through three committees and the floor of the House already as part of the state government finance bill. The governor has indicated that he does not want this as part of that bill, and we thought we'd give him a chance, if this is passed by the House and the Senate is on the floor of the Senate, we give him a chance to look at it individually.
Okay. Questions on the bill? No questions. All right. All right. I renew my motion that House File 1219 with the recommendation to pass the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kahn. And if there are no other announcements, we are adjourned.